UConn Huskies. UConn Huskies. Huskies. UConn. Woof. Back to back championships for the UConn Huskies. In their storied history, Jim Calhoun won three national championships, but none of them were back to back. Leave it to a Jersey guy from Jersey City and a Hurley. Danny Hurley goes back to back. In the last 30, 40 years, it was Duke, it was Florida, and now it's UConn. Welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast, the home of champions, NCAA champion UConn Huskies, NIT champion Seton Hall Pirates. This show is about both championship teams. And the big finger, the big nyeh to the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee for not having the foresight to pick Seton Hall and St. John's into the NCAA tournament. Three teams from this conference, Charles McClellan, you will wear that scarlet letter on your chest for the rest of your life. Big East fans will never forget that. And this is how you prove to the world how good you are. You make lemonades out of lemon. You turn a positive, you turn a negative into a positive. We're going to get to Seton Hall, and we're going to talk to my good friend Dave Popkin, one of the voices of Seton Hall basketball on the radio, who just finished his 21st year of broadcasting Seton Hall men's basketball games. Pop will join me on the Tri-State Basketball Podcast in just a few minutes. We're going to talk to Seton Hall. We're going to talk about Seton Hall. And of course, we're going to begin the show with UConn, the six-time national championship winning UConn Huskies. But before we do that, I want to thank our sponsor, the North Jersey Vipers Softball Club, now in their 14th season. They are one of the premier softball clubs in all of New Jersey. If you or your daughter or someone you know is looking to play softball at a high level and get to the next level, contact my man, Bob Germano, the owner and manager of the club, at NorthJerseyVipers.com. So UConn once again pulls away and puts its foot on the gas with a huge second half, and they pull away from Purdue in the national championship game. A lot of people were wondering, could UConn keep it up? Could they keep winning by double digits? Well, they answered it emphatically. This was a back and forth battle, a game for about, let's say, a half, okay? Because it was a 6-point lead at the half. UConn took the lead into the break. I think the statistic is they had won like 45 straight games when winning at halftime. So for all intents and purposes, we knew UConn was going to win this game. But the question was, would they win by double digits again? And of course, the answer was yes. 12 straight NCAA tournament victories by double digits. That has never been done before. Insane. This team rightfully puts its place. It has stated its case among the greatest college basketball teams of all time. Now, I am not going to say that it was better than those UCLA teams led by Lou Alcindor and Bill Walton and Gail Goodrich and on and on. I am not going to say that. Different era, different time. Okay? I'm not even going to say that it was better than UNLV in 1990 or Georgetown in 1984 or Duke in 1992. But I will say this. It is one of the best, and Dan Hurley said it best. You're not going to find post-UCLA,
you're not going to find a better, more dominant two-year stretch. Last year, UConn outscored their opponents by 120 points in six games. This year, for an encore, they beat it. They outscored their opponents by 140 points in six games. Hurley was asked afterward if this run ranks with the best of all time. This was his answer.
It's the best two-year run, I think, in a very, very long time, just because of everything we lost from last year's team. To lose that much and again, to do what we did again, it's got to be as impressive a two-year run as a program's had since prior to whoever did it before Duke. To me, it is more impressive than what Florida and Duke did because they brought back their entire teams, and we lost some major players.
Who is going to argue with that? This team is doing things that haven't been done. And when you consider they're doing it in a portal era when, like Hurley said, they lost three NBA draft picks and retooled and came back with players who were not part of this team last year. Cam Spencer, the one person who put them over the top, found him in June. Steph Castle, a five-star McDonald's All-American, top 10 recruit in the nation. But we know they don't always pan out, and they certainly don't always pan out in their freshman year. He goes from being top 10 high school player to top 10 pick in the NBA. That will happen. What Hurley did with his staff, with Kamani Young and Luke Murray and Tom Moore, is crazy. It's going to be hard to duplicate. But already, Hurley is thinking, forget about two-peat. We're going for a three-peat, baby. Here's Hurley after the game.
We're going to try and replicate it again. we're going to maintain a championship culture. We're bringing in some very talented high school freshmen. Our returning players through player development will take a big jump, and then we'll strategically add through the portal. I don't think that we're going anywhere.
So if you're thinking and you're sweating as a UConn fan that, oh man, Dan, don't go to Kentucky. Don't go to the NBA. I've learned this a long time ago. You can't judge what's in a man's heart. You can't. And who knows what his goals are and where Dan Hurley wants to aspire to. But can we all agree right now, on April 9th, 2024, Dan Hurley is the best coach in all of college basketball? Who's going to argue with that? All the coaches in Division I are lined up right in front of you. You have first pick as an athletic director to hire that guy. I'm taking Bob Hurley. I'll tell you what, I was taking him before he won this back-to-back. Okay? Now I have to fight people to get him. Best coach in college basketball. He's not going anywhere right now. Why would he? Why would he go to Kentucky when he's built a modern-day Kentucky here? He has helped resurrect it along with Jim Calhoun, and we'll give Kevin Ollie credit there because he did win a national championship with Jim Calhoun's guys, but he won it. All right? Why would he want to leave that when he can do it all here? And he said it. I have all the resources I need right here. And he would have to uproot his family. And Andrea Hurley, who we met at Seton Hall, who likes it, loves it in the Northeast. They're Jersey people. Why do they want to go to Kentucky at this stage in their career when they have everything they need and they can keep building it and rebuilding it every single year? I said it last year right here on this podcast after UConn won under Dan Hurley. I said, Dan Hurley will win multiple national championships. He's not done yet. I didn't predict that he would go back to back. I said, maybe, but I said he would win multiple. Now he's won two. Are you going to doubt that he's not going to win three? Book it. Go to Vegas. Go to Vegas. If you can find a bet, Dan Hurley will win a third national championship. Just place your bet now. You can thank me later. They're already one of the odds-on favorites to win next year by Vegas, and we don't even know who's going. Okay, we know Tristan Newton has used up his eligibility. Cam Spencer, we know that Stephon Castle is gone. He's a lottery pick. We're 99% sure. You know, I'm going to say 100% that Donovan Clingan is gone, a lottery pick. The only starting five member that we don't know is Alex Caravan. He's projected as a second round pick. But what if he goes in the first round? He'd be foolish not to go. They could lose all five starters. And Vegas is still going to pick them as one of the six or seven favorites to win it all next year. That is mind-blowing. That's insane. Why? Because of what they have coming in. Because he still has players returning on this roster who are going to do big things. Who we know Hurley can coach. We know he can recruit. And we know he can mold them all together in a short period of time. He has built an empire in the basketball capital of the world. And I'm from Connecticut. I laughed when they came up with that. Where does UConn have the audacity to call itself the basketball capital of the world? Well, all they've done is win two more national championships back to back, six in all. They have rightfully established their place among the bluest of blue bloods. UCLA with 11 national championships, Kentucky with eight, and tied for third, UConn and North Carolina with six. Six championships in 25 years. Bam. Duke won five from 91 to 2015. UConn is ahead of them. Who would have ever thought that? Ever. When UConn first joined the Big East in 1980, when UConn won an NIT championship, when Jim Calhoun first took over. None of this, not even the wildest, craziest UConn fan could have ever dreamt something like this. Dan Hurley is staying. He's not going anywhere. That defensive plan that he and Luke Murray devised was crazy. All right? What they did in this game was, it was clear. They were going to play Zach Edey one-on-one with Clingan, protect Clingan. You could not afford to lose Donovan Clingan. All right? Between Clingan and Samson Johnson, they had nine fouls to give. Samson Johnson could foul out. No disrespect to him, but you could not have Donovan Clingan foul out. How many fouls did they combine for at the end of the game? Nine. Zach Edey had the greatest championship game since John Morton from Seton Hall, when Morton scored 35 points against Michigan in 1989. Zach Edey scored 37 points. And Purdue lost by double digits. Zach Edey had one of the greatest postseasons since Lou Alcindor. And still, it wasn't enough. Still, Purdue lost by double digits, 75 to 60. Why? Because UConn was deeper. They proved all year long They are the deepest team in the country. They are one of the most unselfish teams in the country. And Dan Hurley said it in his post-game press conference. Zach Edey was going to get his. We were going to let him score 25-30, but we were not going to let the other players beat us. Purdue averages 20 three-pointers a game. Shooting. They hoist 20 threes a game. There are games when they hoisted over 30 threes. Well, up until the last minute and a half of this game, do you know how many threes they attempted? Five. Two more in garbage time. One for seven. When they hit that 1-3, Hurley called timeout because he was pissed. He wanted to make sure that UConn knew, do not give up the three-point line. Do not give up the three-point line. A masterful defensive performance from a master of defense who learned it from one of the greatest defensive-minded coaches of all time in Bob Hurley and another outstanding defensive coach in PJ Carlissimo. Here's Hurley on the defensive game plan that Luke Murray put together after the game.
The game plan and Luke, you know, Luke for a day and a half prep, to have us as ready as he did defensively for that game was just impressive. We obviously, you know, we didn't want to give up threes. We didn't care if Zach, you know, took 25, 28 shots to get 30, 35 points. This whole game plan was like no Smith, no Lawyer, no Gillis, no Jones. You know, keep that collective group under 18, 20 points as a group. They had no chance to win, no matter how well Zach played.
What? A dominant, dominant defensive performance. This team, this UConn team, has to be appreciated and will be appreciated as one of the best teams in the modern era in the last 40 years of college basketball. A masterful performance once again in the postseason by a team that all it does is win in the postseason. Keep disrespecting us. And a master motivator in Dan Hurley, who finds ways somehow to make UConn the underdog. Think about that. Any chance he got, oh, NCAA selection committee, you're going to put us in the hardest region? We're the number one overall seed, and you're going to put us in a region with the Big 12 champion, the Big 10 champion, the best team from the Mountain West who played us in the national championship game last year. You're going to disrespect us like that? Well, all I'm going to do is use that as motivation. Oh, CBS, you're going to hide us. You're going to put Duke on CBS and you're going to hide us on True TV and bury us. We should be on CBS. I'm going to use that as motivation. Wait, what did Brad Underwood say? Oh, we've seen UConn before. We play teams like this all the time in the Big Ten. Motivation. Zach Edey. Oh, Donovan Klingon's a great player, but I play against centers like him all the time in the Big Ten. Motivation. How Hurley takes anything and uses it as motivation is masterful. The greatest coach in college basketball. A great motivator, a great recruiter, a great preparation, person of preparation, a great X's and O's guy, the entire complete package. Is he a lunatic? Does he need to tone it down? Sure. Was it absolute lunacy when he walked out of the court and pushed Cam Spencer and got a warning from the official? Of course. But wouldn't you want this guy fighting for your team? I don't care how many fans out there hate Hurley and hate his antics. If Dan Hurley coached their team, they would love him too. And don't give me that bullshit. No, I would never want him to coach my team. Of course you would. Your team would instantly be relevant. Your team would instantly be a national championship contender. Of course you'd want him on your team. He fights for the Big East. He fights for his team. He fights for his players. When the freaking commissioner wouldn't fight for the Big East, he's fighting for Seton Hall. He's fighting for St. John's, Providence. Iron sharpens iron. You heard him say it. The Big East prepared us for these moments. Dan Hurley, you can't say enough good things about him. You hate him? Go ahead and hate him. Be a hater. Guy's a winner. He's won multiple national championships. He's surpassed Bob, right? Bobby won back-to-back players, won back-to-back championships as a player at Duke. And Danny goes ahead as a coach and wins back-to-back national championships as a head coach. What's more impressive? I mean, Bobby went to Duke where they had all kinds of All-Americans. Impressive, yes. What Dan Hurley has done is unprecedented in my lifetime. Unprecedented. Duke had four players returning, and they won back-to-back national championships. Florida had all five players returning. Dan Hurley had Donovan Klingon, role player, Alex Caravan, starter, but more of a role player, and Tristan Newton, starter. Two starters that were returning, a sixth man in Hassan Diarra, and a backup center in Donovan Klingon, and wins a national championship. How do you like them apples? And now he's going for a three-peat. Look out, rest of the world. Don't bet against Dan Hurley. All right, that is the UConn story. Of course, I hope to have more on this team in the coming weeks. I hope to have Dan on, as he has been so kind to do on our podcast. I hope to have him on in the coming days as the dust settles in UConn and after their victory parade. All right, let's turn our attention now to Seton Hall. The Pirates had a magical run to the NIT championship, of course, eventually pulling out a thrilling come-from-behind win over Indiana State in that championship game to claim their second NIT title overall, first since 1953. And oh, by the way, that is just their second national championship across all sports, in case you're counting at home. So both by the men's basketball team, both in the NIT, and the man who was there to call the games. Good friend of mine, we welcome back to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast, Dave Popkin, the voice of Seton Hall Radio, and of course, NEC Basketball. Dave, what a thrill it must have been for you. Thanks for coming on the show.
Brian, always great to spend some time with you. And Gary is certainly the voice of the Pirates, but when I can fill in and do it, I'm grateful for it. And I did get to do those last two games. And they were, you know, the first game against Georgia, not quite as close, but the second game against Indiana State was a real doozy.
Yeah, Gary, of course, you know, handling the main play-by-play duties and off with the Mets and kind of, hey, somebody had to do this. Dave, you were calling college basketball games in April for the first time in your career, correct?
Definitely. We've come close before because I used to do the CIT games for about 7 years on CBS Sports Network. And that would come right up to about April 1st, the semifinals and the finals of that tournament. But in terms of the team that I do, I mean, I used to do Monmouth and they never made it past the first game of the NCAA tournament, same with LIU, and then with Seton Hall. Since I've been there, we never made it past the first weekend. So, yeah, it was a very long season and exciting season. I think overall I got to do 56 games this year, so I need a nap.
Well, listen, you know, it's good to have years like this because it keeps you going. And, you know, I heard your call of the final play by Davis, and then, of course, the three-pointer, as every Seton Hall fan had to hold their breath. Let's pick it up with that comeback, Dave. You know, this was really one of the most thrilling games that Seton Hall had played all year. You know, they played some nail-biters, of course, had to go into overtime against St. Joe's in the NIT, so it's not like they hadn't played close games, but they go down, it's nip and tuck, back and forth, and then suddenly Indiana State goes on this I guess it was an 8-0 run to go up 7 with 3 minutes to go. Shaheen finally calls timeout. What's going through your mind and take us through those last crazy 3 minutes.
I definitely didn't count them out. I felt like they were going to win the game all along. They had a defensive advantage. They had a size and strength advantage. They seemed to have a will advantage. Now, Indiana State is obviously excellent, 32 wins, a lot of skilled players. I don't know if it was you or one of our other colleagues on Twitter that said they were like Creighton without Kalkbrenner.
Yeah, I'll take credit for that one.
Yeah. And I think that that was true. You know, they have a lot of good shooters. They take a million threes, like 50% of their shots this year were three pointers. So, and that was not a particular strength of Seton Hall's most of the year, guarding the 3-point line. So that made it a dangerous game. And Seton Hall was an underdog in the game, according to Vegas. But even with all of that, I just felt like with the heart that they showed throughout the tournament, particularly Dawes, Adewusu, really all of them, all those seniors, they were able to dig in and get stops. And then Dawes is superhuman sometimes. He's the separator for this year's team. They can grind out wins. They'll win games in the 60s. They'll win games in the 70s. But when they score 80 and they score 90, it's because Dawes had a big game, right? It's because he's gone for 20 plus. He has 5 3-pointers. He gets on a little roll and he creates separation. And he had one of those Jimmy Chitwood moments at the end where he hit the three from the top of the key at Hinkle. And he was off balance, didn't have the best look in the world, but I'll count on him to make that shot every day. And the kid showed such heart. He was the MVP of the tournament, well deserved. And, you know, then Davis just doing what he does. That was a pro move to tie the game, spinning move in the lane. And Ryan Whalen afterwards told me, you know, we'll count on Dre 10 out of 10 times in that situation to make that shot, especially going one-on-one against somebody. He has just great moves, and that comes from hard work. These guys are really hard workers. Seton Hall developed them as players, as Kevin Willard did in his tenure. All those guys, most of those guys anyway, got better, you know, under his tutelage, but you're seeing it even more now with Shaheen Holloway. These guys continue to get better each year. And Davis, you know, is the latest example of that. And then that last frantic sequence after Seton Hall goes ahead, they've scored 7 straight points, and Indiana State had, I would say, two or three very good chances and a couple of not so good chances. The first play is something that I want to talk about with you because I watched it 20 times
Okay.
afterwards.
Yep.
Now, when you're doing it live, you don't have the luxury of seeing it in slow-mo, right? I had to explain this last series of plays to somebody, and it took me about 3 minutes. And they're like, wait, how much time was on the clock? I said 8.4 seconds. So it's like boom, 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 boom. And you have to try to be as, you know, descriptive and specific and clean as possible so that people can understand what's going on. But it was crazy because on the first attempt by Swope, he leans into Dawes, knocks him over, no foul called, and the ball pops straight up into the air. It wasn't really a shot. So the ball, it lands right back in his hands. And if there was going to be a call at all there, it should have been traveling. And I haven't heard anybody say that, but it was
Fascinating.
travel because Dawes didn't touch it. He runs into Dawes.
Right.
Really, the offensive player creates the contact. Okay. Seton Hall, I think I called it cosmic justice or karma or something, that they didn't get a foul call on them there like they did in 1989.
Oh,
So
please.
they get the benefit there. The ball pops up. The kid catches it. Should be traveling. It's a play on. He goes to shoot a 3-pointer. Fetty Aco comes out of nowhere and blocks it cleanly. Like maybe he got him a little bit with the body, but he blocks it cleanly. But then you're like, oh my God, because their best player, I think, or one of them, Conwell, is out there on the wing. It was a deep three, but he had a clean look and it hit the front of the rim. And that ended up being the last opportunity because the tip would have been late. But what a frantic finish, and Seton Hall's defense, you know, carried the day again.
And this is after, by the way, you missed something in there, Dave. Very well done. Great recap. Richmond, the second shot, actually tipped the ball back to Conwaller, right? And because then he fell down, I thought he would be able to grab it, but because Dawes was on the floor, Richmond couldn't secure the ball and just tried to tap it away. And then, you know, the 40-foot shot ends up going 39 feet. So very well done. And I love the fact, okay, you can make a case, was there a foul, was there not? I do love to see moments like this where it's just play on, right? We saw it at the end of the Creighton game, you know, with a foul there that maybe Ashworth could have been fouled by Dre Davis. They played on. I just like the fact that, you know what, guys are playing, let them decide it. And like you said, you know, the call wasn't made. The championship this time goes to Seton Hall. And for a team, Dave, that rolled the dice and said, we're not ready to end our season. We're not ready to end our togetherness. What a reward, because it rarely happens this way that the team, the best team in the NIT, goes on to win the whole thing. If this isn't a commercial for, you know what, guys, let's keep playing on. We have something to play for here. I don't know what is.
Totally agree. And it's probably the last real NIT or the last like
Yeah.
full competitive field because of the Fox college basketball crown that'll be played in Las Vegas next year. Yeah, once they got past that first game and they got over the shock of not making it, and Dawes and Anadewusu to some extent saved their bacon in the St. Joe's game, they were a steamroller. I mean, the next three games were not that competitive. I mean, they were playing their best basketball of the year, and arguably they played it in their last game as well, even though it was a close game, because they were
Right.
playing a fellow snubby, right? That should have been in the tournament, if not for all of those bid stealers. So it was a thrilling team to watch, and there were a lot of layers. We could do a whole show just on the last couple minutes of that final game, but they showed heart, they made clutch shots, and they got the stop at the end. And I was really thrilled for them because they're easy guys to root for. I mean, Dawes is the nicest guy in the world. You know, Richmond has really grown into himself. Bediako is fantastic. I mean, you could, you know, have a conversation with him on any topic whatsoever. All the guys, you know, really an enjoyable season to be around them.
We know Seton Hall's best years throughout the years. Dave, you've been at this a long time. You just completed your 21st season. Their best years are when they have an alpha at the point. You know, going in the Big East years, right? Whether it was Gerald Green, whether it was James Major, whether it was Shaheen Holloway, Andre Barrett, on and on. Quincy McKnight was a darn good one, right? On through
Yep.
Kadari Richmond. That's where it begins. They're coached by a point guard, one of the best in Seton Hall history. So, whatever it takes, you know, I'm going to throw a number out there. Would Cooks come back for 300,000? I don't know. There's probably some football school out there that can offer them 400,000 or 500,000. We don't know, but we do know this: it's going to be interesting, and whoever comes back, it dictates kind of the domino effects of then where do you plug in the other holes, right? You have to figure out who's coming back first before you start to add other pieces.
Yeah, I would think that it's like the NBA right now, where you say, okay, here's our board of best available players in the portal. Here's our board of best available point guards if our point guard leaves. Here's, you know, they have two high school recruits coming in. One of them is a combo guard and one of them is a center. I don't know if, you know, Felton, Jasim Felton, or God's Will, Erharian, I think is how you pronounce it. We'll figure that out
No,
soon.
I'll go with that.
Okay, I don't know if they'll be able to step in and play right away and be rotation guys. So, do they need to, like, let's say Richmond doesn't come back? Malachi Brown, I like, but he didn't get a lot of playing time this year. And I'm not sure that he is, you know, an alpha point guard at this point in the Big East. So, do you have to go out and overspend or whatever to get a really good point guard to tie the rest of this team together? If not a point guard, certainly a go-to guy, you know, and
Yeah.
Richmond was able to, at various times in the NIT and against UConn and against some of these other teams, take over the game. And whether it's with his passing, his rebounding, his defense, his scoring, he was able to take over a game and be better than most of the other guys that are guarding him. And it's hard to find that person. It's hard to find that player in college basketball. So if it's not going to be him, you probably have to find somebody to fill that role.
And find it soon. So I think, like you said, the portal closes May 1st. So I think they need to find out, and they probably will find out sooner rather than later where it all stands. David, as you look back on this season, where does this season rank with your favorites as a broadcaster?
Well, the NIT was the biggest game I ever called, the championship game. So this team, for that reason and for that run, ranks high for me. And they beat UConn by 15 points this year. So that to me, it's one of their better teams, even though they didn't make the tournament. The team that beat NC State out in Wichita with Delgado and Carrington and Desi and those guys, that ranks highly because Seton Hall hasn't had many NCAA tournament wins in the last 21 years since I've been there. The first team that Gary and I did, the 03-04 team with Andre Barrett and Kelly Whitney and John Allen, Andre Sweet,
I love that team.
that was a really good team. I think that team could hang with any of these other Seton Hall teams. They beat Arizona in the first round, had an unlucky draw playing, Duke in North Carolina. But one of my favorite moments for sure was 2016, winning the Big East tournament with Isaiah Whitehead. That was a fantastic team that got a horrible draw against Gonzaga, playing them at altitude late at night. It was like an impossible spot. That's a team that could have made a run. And then the Mamu Powell team could have made a run. That could have been a Sweet 16 team, but I think this year's team might have been better than that team because of their defense and their toughness. And Dawes kind of filled the Powell role, right? He could go on those binges and he could hit the deep threes and give you those momentum plays there where the crowd really gets into it. So it's a very difficult question, but this is one of my favorite years, definitely.
Yeah, and like you said earlier, I loved what you said, players that you can root for, that you can fall behind. I mean, Dre Davis is just a guy who wouldn't want him on your team, and a player who so many Seton Hall fans will adore for years to come. And Dawes, he's not a 6'6", right? 6'7" shooter out there. He's undersized, really, the only pure shooter on the team that so many teams gamed for. A band of overachievers, maybe under-recruited, overachieved. And I think it was Kadari Richmond who said it best, hey, we won the NIT. We came here and proved that Seton Hall is a place that you can come and play and do well at. I'm paraphrasing, but it was something to that effect, and very well said by Cooks.
Yeah, I think so. And he's a guy that didn't say boo the first year that he was on the team that I could tell. He was very reticent, kind of a shy kid. And they gave him his own talk show in the off season. I think that helped him a little bit, being the interviewer, and having some guests and just trying to, show that sense of humor and a little bit of his personality because it is there. And I think to be a leader, you need that. You can't just lead by example. You have to be able to talk to guys and also share your wisdom and some leadership skills. So I think that he developed in that way this year. If this team gets him back next year, they're a serious threat. I mean, they're a serious threat. And if not, it's kind of back to the drawing board. But I think that I trust Shaheen Holloway in these matters. Like, nobody know who Jaden Bediako was. People had questions about Adeyemi Owusu, and they didn't know who Hutchins Everett was, and he melded this team into a winning unit.
Yeah, like Danny Hurley, I guess these Seton Hall point guards really know how to coach, know how to motivate, get the most out of their players, and get them to buy into what they're doing. How about that UConn team, Dave?
Yeah,
What
and
would you
Donald
call
Copeland
it?
too.
What's that?
And Donald Copeland as
And
well.
yeah, of course, Donald Copeland is going to do great things. Great things. He's already doing great things at WAC. So,
Yeah,
how
UConn.
about that UConn team and the fact that Seton Hall was one of only three teams to beat them, and they beat them by 15.
Yeah, and they beat him the year before when they won the national championship. And Richmond had a lot to do with that. But they also, I mean, they played one of their best games. UConn played probably one of their worst games,
I'd
but
say they're worst, yeah.
yeah, but you know what? They beat him. And Klingon, even though Klingon had pretty big numbers in short minutes in that game before he got hurt, I felt like they were able to kind of contain him to the point, maybe not on defense, but on offense, they were really making him work. Those points were not coming easy, and I didn't feel like he was going to go off for 30 that game. I mean, he ended up with like 13 or 14 points and contributed. For the committee to say, oh, well, Klingon got hurt. Seton Hall was in control of the game when Klingon got hurt, even though he was having a decent game. So I don't know. I mean, I think that Seton Hall beat Marquette. They won at Providence. I mean, you can go up and down the resume. We don't have to do it. It's they should have been in. So,
So here's the $1 million question, Dave. How do you equate this to an NCAA tournament bid? Can you, an NIT championship or a Sweet 16 banner? Which one resonates
oh
more?
yeah, I mean, a Sweet 16 banner is a different thing. If you win two, three games in the NCAA tournament, that's immeasurable in terms of what it does for your program. But if I compare this year, winning the NIT, winning five games, having all those games at Walsh, having the great, time with the fans that traveled out to Indianapolis, being able to hang a banner, get a ring, all that stuff, compared to losing in the first round to TCU out in San Diego, I would take the NIT win. There's no doubt. There's no doubt. The program has more momentum and good feeling going into the off season to help them with recruiting and ticket sales and Onward Seatonia and all of that stuff off of this NIT run and the kind of little engine that could storyline than just bowing out to, some other mid-major in the first round. I really believe that.
Well said. I agree 100%. Maybe if they were to win one game in the NCAA tournament, I would
Yeah.
still take the NIT championship. But a Sweet 16, no, I would take that much over this. But well said. It gave fans, the players, the coaches, 2 weeks, almost 2.5 weeks of excitement, cheers. And lastly, a guy like Jaquan Sanders, right, who had been forgotten for so long, suddenly is like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe he's someone we can build around and could be have a future next year with this team as well. So it was very good for him.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely the raw talent there for him as a shooter. His passing is pretty good. His defense is coming along. I would say that in a third year with Shaheen Holloway, the kid could definitely blossom into a double-figure scorer. I mean, he's got great range. If he can work on his free throw shooting as the rest of the guys done. Seton Hall was one of the best free throw shooting teams in the league this year after being maybe the worst, I think, last year. So there's been a lot of development, and I think that he could benefit from an off season of one-on-ones and small group work to become a really lethal shooter. And I don't know, where that goes, honestly, but he would certainly benefit from staying.
No question. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll see how it all comes together and who's leaving and who's coming back over the next month, month and a half. Dave, it's been a ride. I appreciate the time. I always enjoy talking to you at the games and being a good friend of mine and a good friend of this podcast. And hey, continued success with yours, crashing the boards, and good luck with baseball season as you begin another season with the Buffalo Bisons.
Thanks. Yeah, luckily, I'm not doing a full season with them. I do, about 20, 30 games a year, which is just enough to scratch the itch. I'm a kind of a baseball guy by trade that's become more of a basketball announcer in recent years. But I do enjoy being out at the ballpark and keeping score and joking around with my partner, Pat Malacaro, and just the whole exercise of doing that because baseball is so different than the other sports, as you know. It's like a lifetime of knowledge. You never know what's going to come up during the game. So it's the ultimate test of the storyteller and the historian and the conversationalist. It's kind of a different thing from all the other sports. So I like to flex that muscle a little bit, you know, to make sure that it's still there. So yeah, I get a little bit of a rest, then I go into that. But this season was great. I appreciate you having me on. You're the man.
All right, there he is, Dave Popkin, the voice of Seton Hall men's basketball, along with Gary Cohen for 21 years. Dave, thank you, my friend. Always great to have you on and always great to talk to you. Full disclosure, when Dave and I were recording that interview, Dre Davis from Seton Hall entered the transfer portal. So I didn't find out about it until after our interview. So I want to talk about Dre Davis because it's a huge chip that Seton Hall loses. Forget about the points. All right. He averaged 15 points, 5.9 rebounds this year. It's more than that. Dre Davis became one of my all-time favorite Seton Hall players. Certainly my favorite player on this year's team. Just a guy who overachieved at 6'6", would often guard players 6'7", 6'9", bigger, taller, stronger than him, an undersized four. In a lot of ways, had to guard the small forwards, the power forwards, whatever the matchups were. This guy did it time and time again. If there's one player that you knew was going to be consistent and give you points and production every single game, it was Dre Davis. Double figures in almost every game. You could just book it. 15 points, 6 rebounds. All right. A number of games in the 20s. Scored a career high 28 against DePaul. There was a stretch late in the season where it was 20 points every single game. 21 against Butler, 18 against Creighton, 20 points against UConn, 18 against Villanova, 28 against DePaul. Just mark it down. And then he goes to the NIT, scores 14, 18, 14, 19, 18. You see what I'm getting at here? Someone, some team out there is going to get an outstanding young man with 1 year of eligibility left who is going to easily and quickly become not only a coach's favorite, but a fan favorite. You're going to have coaches lining up fisticuffs wanting to get this guy, all right, with suitcases. I'm not going to put, you know, $500,000 on him. I'm not going to say that he's going to be the most, you know, coveted transfer. But every program in the country can use Dre Davis. Okay? Every program. And that includes UConn. I wouldn't be surprised. My man DJ White, who's a huge UConn fan, tweeted at me and said, "I'm sorry, Brian, but I would love to have this young man at UConn." Yeah, I told him, "Get in line, DJ." All right, get in line. I'm sure Dan Hurley is already placing a call. All right, that's how coveted he'll be. A huge loss for Seton Hall. Now, can Seton Hall, in any way, shape, or form, keep Kadari Richmond, any money they had reserved for Dre Davis? Can they throw it all at Kadari Richmond? I'm going to say it's still a long shot. I'm not closing the door on Kadari Richmond because he has a lot of options professionally. I don't think he's ready for the NBA. I don't think he'll ever be an NBA player. At best, he's a two-way contract player, a G League player, at best with a 10-day contract. Would Kadari Richmond stay at Seton Hall? Could they pony up, I don't know, $300,000-$400,000 and make him stay? I still put it at 20%. 80%, 85%, he's gone. If you can retain Dylan Adewusu, Elijah Hutchins Everett, Isaiah Coleman, Malachi Brown said he's staying, Jaquan Sanders, I mean, that's not going to put fear, but that's a decent nucleus. You're going to have to get a major point guard. You're going to have to get a major center and a power forward. You have the recruits coming in. You can win in the Big East with some pieces there. Let's see how it all shakes out over the next week, over the next month, over the next 2 months. But the first domino has fallen and Dre Davis has entered the portal. I'm sure there will be more to come, just like on every college basketball roster. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Before we go, I want to thank our sponsors, the North Jersey Viper Softball Club, and of course, Mike Supa of Ward White Sotheby's Realty. Mike is a trusted name in real estate. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore, we're talking Monmouth, Ocean Counties, give Mike a call at 201-988-2577 and tell him Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. As long as there is news to report, we will have a podcast for you over the next several weeks. Just because the season is done, I am not putting down my microphone. You have my word on it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. My name is Brian Dean of Ellis. So long.